Hey, everybody, Matt, Jess and Dave here.
Sorry, Jess, just butting in quickly to let the listeners know that I'm going to be in Sydney this week, coming up the 8th to the 12th of May, and you can get tickets now via mattshieldcomedy.com, then going straight to Brisbane on the 16th to the 19th. So tickets for my show Dryer Dryer in Sydney and Melbourne.
Sorry, Matt, I'll just cut you off there. I just need to tell everyone that our quiz show, our web series, is out right now. Do go on the quiz show. You can see it on Stupid Old Channel for free on YouTube. Type in "Do Go On The Quiz Show" and you can see three episodes right now covering topics like Google, Queen Victoria, the Olympics, and we got five more episodes coming up. So like and subscribe, whatever that means.
They are big topics too. And I said Sydney and Melbourne. I meant Sydney and Brisbane. Anyway, let's get on with the show.
I'm still here too.
Oh, hey, Jess.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbroadcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Do Go On. My name is Dave Warnicki, and as always, I'm here with Jess Perkins and Matt Stewart.
Hello, Jess, and hello, Dave. It's good to be here again.
Hi, Matt.
You look like you were poising to do the next bit.
I was going to, and then because you kept going, I freaked myself out and I couldn't do it. And then I left too long a pause and I thought, all right, Jess, you got to go for a different joke here. And I did a no end for you.
I love it. I love a block.
Yeah.
I love a comedy block.
Because what Matt has unfortunately done there is the musical episode is next week.
Oh, no. I've gone early. That's story of my life.
What am I like?
Dave, we've got a really exciting thing out at the moment. Would you say that? I'd say that.
I'd say it too.
I would agree.
With who? Matt or me?
Both.
Oh.
Oh.
Can you?
Interesting. Yeah, you can never pick a side, can you?
It's on our, no, it's not on our YouTube channel. It's on the Stupid Old channel. And it's our new web series. One episode down so far.
That's right. We released it just a few days ago now. The first episode is about the history of the Hollywood sign. And basically, it's like a multi-dimensional version of this podcast.
Yeah. It's got all the dimensions.
Yes.
Sound. Looking. smell.
Yes.
Space.
Space.
And
taste. You gotta lick your computer though.
Yep.
But we went around individually and put a little bit of our own taste on all of your computers.
The snozzberries taste like snozzberries.
So don't make that a waste of our time. You lick your goddamn computers.
Okay. It took a lot of time and effort. Too much, some would argue. Our accountant.
But yeah, go check that out. It was so fun. We've been getting, I think, nearly nothing but positive feedback. So go look at it and tell us how we can improve it.
No.
Nah, don't do that.
Balance it out a little bit. Nah, don't. Just give it. We're very fragile. Give us only good news.
And it's too late to change anything, obviously.
That's true. We filmed it pre-COVID. And you'll notice that because we are sitting basically on each other's laps.
Yeah, it was a different time.
Different time. Now we are a good 1.5 meters away from each other.
At all times.
But the way this podcast works is probably best described by Jess Perkins in song.
Fuck you. Every week, one of the three does a report, brings it back to the class. How was that?
That's
encore,
great.
Encore.
Fuck you.
And the way we get onto topic is with a question. This week, I'm doing the report, so I'm asking the question. And my question is, I'm going to open up to Jess first because I know Dave knows the answer to this.
Aww.
Jess, okay. Do you get free? You get first free shot.
Yeah, but what if I don't know it and then I look dumb?
Which legendary comedy actor is known for his roles in such shows as Saturday Night Live, The Simpsons, and News Radio?
Who's in SNL and The Simpsons?
Famous. He's not wearing a tie at all.
Famous for his roles. You might know him from.
Fuck. What's his name?
Mothballing My Battleship. Dig Your Own Grave and Save.
I know who it is.
The president's neck is missing.
I'm going to throw it open to Dave.
I actually don't know. Phil Hartman.
That is Phil Hartman.
Shit.
That's really cool. I don't know. Do we have microphones in front of our faces when we talked about our favorite Simpsons characters before?
That was on the Patreon bonus episode, which came out this week. And I was so excited to hear that we all love Phil Hartman characters. I'm like, oh, I've got some fun coming up later tonight.
That is exciting. We just recorded an episode and, to be honest, it nearly went for an hour and a half. So we used to say there were many, but they're not many bonus episodes.
We promise many, but sometimes we over-deliver.
Yeah, for our Patreon, and I did a report on the great Siegfried and Roy.
Yeah, amazing.
The original Tiger Kings.
Oh, that was so fun. I reckon it's one of the best bonus episodes we've done.
And like on that, you said who are the original Tiger Kings and my mind couldn't get to Siegfried and Roy fast enough. It was the same here. I could see his face immediately. Yeah. There's a particular picture of him that's in my head right now and I could not get his name. And then you said, and I was like, Phil Hartman, fuck.
So he's been suggested by three people, by Megan Reef. In Shippensburg, Pennsylvania, sounds like a cool place.
Shippensburg.
Also by Dan Brunetti of Canterbury. And thirdly by Selena Hoots.
A lovely name.
Of San Jose, California, USA.
Great suggestions and great names, all of you.
So, I don't know if most people probably know that the story doesn't end nicely, but... Mm. Philip Edward Hartman was born on the 24th of September 1948 in Brantford, Ontario, in Canada. He was the fourth of eight children, parents Doris and Rupert.
Eight. Where does that sit on the scale?
Oh, too many. Absolutely too many.
Yeah, does it put any questions in your mind?
My main question is, do they know what's causing it? That's my main question.
Good question.
I don't know if I have others. My other question would be, how do you think of so many names?
Right, yeah. Eight names.
Because my dad is one of eight.
Yeah.
And there's a Joan and a John.
They ran out. Yeah.
What?
And the first two kids just named after the parents.
Oh, smart.
Wow.
And then...
That seems like...
And then they only had to think of six names and they still went Joan and John. Crazy. That's the kind of, family I come from. They had a boy first and a girl and thought, we've already named
what a
him
funny,
Philip
so
Jr.
At one point, they're a family of four with two names.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's so confusing as well.
Is that why they
Who are you talking to? Me or the kid?
Me or the toddler.
Yeah. Who's in trouble for not doing the dishes? I can't keep up.
I love it. I think Canada's feel like they overachieve with comedy.
Yeah.
So many of the great comedians seem to be born in Canada.
Mm.
His dad, Rupert, was a building supply salesman and Doris was a homemaker. Great couple name, I reckon, Rupert and Doris.
Love that. Doris is particularly good.
Love it very much. According to a CBS profile, the Canadian-born Hartman himself once credited his talent to his birth order. Quote, "I'm from a large family. I'm a middle child," he once said. "I suppose I didn't get what I wanted out of my family life, so I started seeking love and attention elsewhere," end quote. That's a bit of a classic thing you hear sometimes from people in the biz, the show biz, that is.
I thought when you said birth order, you meant like it was my birthright.
Yeah.
My heritage, I was destined to be a comedy great.
I came from a building supply salesman and a homemaker, obviously. One plus one equals.
I was expecting a youngest child.
Ah, right, because they're always...
Show-offs.
Show-offs, right. I'm a middle child. You're an eldest, aren't you?
I'm a youngest.
Youngest.
Dave and I are both youngest.
Yeah, right.
So doesn't that
make
sense?
Couple of show-offs.
I'm a baby. I'm a widow baby. That's what I say at family dinners. I say, oh, I'm a widow baby. You have to feed me. My brother punches me still.
And you're always like, my diaper needs changing.
Yeah, I'm always in a nappy.
You've got a weird accent.
And no top on. Everyone's like, Jess,
please.
This is not funny anymore. Please. Hasn't been funny for 30 years. I don't know. I'm a widow baby.
I love that as well because you're 29 and it hasn't been funny for 30 years. Not since the womb has this bit worked. When Hartman was 10, the family moved to Lewiston, Maine in the United States, then on to Meriden, Connecticut, before landing in suburban LA where he attended Westchester High School.
Hmm.
This is the first time I really took notice of the spelling of Connecticut. It's spelled Connecticut.
Yes.
I'd never noticed that before. Mm. I thought Americans were the ones who just pronounced words as they were written.
Yeah, like aluminum.
Yeah. We spell aluminium differently.
Do we?
Yeah, we got an extra letter.
Oh, I always thought they just missed it. But if it's spelled differently, I guess that makes it more sense.
It's actually spelled differently. Dave, you got the tie-breaking vote here.
Asphalt.
Adidas.
Oregano. So he was a bit of a class clown at Westchester, once telling an interviewer, quote, I was class clown because I could do John Wayne, Jack Benny, Jack Kennedy, Lyndon Johnson, and entertain my friends on the senior lawn, end quote. Showing signs of his gift for mimicry that would later make him famous.
I like to imagine that his voice has always sounded like that. Yeah. Because he has a beautiful voice.
What a voice. Oh, what a voice.
And I imagine it like a 13-year-old with that voice.
It's like we call Dave golden tonsils, but
he's got platinum tonsils.
My voice is running out this week, so we'll see if I make the whole episode.
He's got not only golden tonsils, but golden lips, golden teeth, golden gums.
I can't talk.
Hello.
According to the New Yorker, in his teen years, Hartman surfed, smoked pot. Maybe grew it as well, acted in theater productions, dated girls, and did impressions to entertain his friends. After school, he kept surfing and smoking pot, but also enrolled in an art course at Santa Monica College, but dropped out to become a roadie for a band called Rockin' Foo. maybe up there for the new worst band name I've ever heard.
Rockin' Foo.
How do you spell Foo?
F-double-O.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know if the Foo Fighters are named after them. They had a beef with them early.
What is Foo?
Well, Foo Fighter, that was a type of plane.
Right.
Foo, though. It's called Foo Fighter.
Yeah.
Crazy. I didn't know that.
Huh.
I never thought about it.
It's also the, what's the initialism? What's the other one?
Acronym.
Acronym. It's also the acronym for my favorite ever racehorse, Fields of Omar. He's one of those guys who had a bunch of noteworthy mini careers outside of the career that made him famous.
Mm.
So it was a roadie. But after his sinners wrote, he went on to study graphic arts at California State University, after which he opened his own graphic design company. I also read that he worked for his brother. They seem to contradict each other, but anyway, small detail there. During this time, he helped design more than 40 album covers, including for bands including Poco, Steely Dan, America, and Crosby, Stills, and Nash.
He designed their album covers.
He did. You know that there's this sort of Celtic cross style logo for Crosby, Stills, and Nash, he designed that.
That is the best fun fact I've heard in ages.
Wild? Yeah, no, like,
wow.
That, for me, I'm dining out on that for the rest of my life.
Mm-hmm.
That's a super cool thing. But, that's just a little footnote in his life.
That's really cool.
That's very cool.
And I read a quote, him describing it somewhere. He's like, I don't think he was super proud of it. And then, like, it's probably none of it is super groundbreaking art design or anything. But, he said he only has one of those album covers up on his wall. So, I don't know. I sort of reading between the lines, he wasn't super proud of all of it. But still, what a rad thing. And that was just awesome. Like in his 20s, just banging out some, three of those bands are legendary. I don't know if I know Poco, but Steely Dan, America, and Crosby, Stills, and Nash are all huge.
Yeah, and then Rockin' Foo.
Let's not forget Rockin' Foo.
According to ABC News, Hartman was living a bohemian existence where pot was plentiful. I just never thought of him as a pothead either. He always plays usually plays pretty straight kind of characters.
Yeah.
Around this time, he met Gretchen Lewis, who would go on to become his first wife. They married in 1970. So he was still quite young, obviously.
Doesn't bode well when you say first wife.
Yeah. So he's 20, 21, 22. Steve Small, Hartman's close friend and lawyer, told the ABC News program 2020 that, quote, Phil fell in love easily, but wasn't very skilled at continuing a relationship.
Okay.
By 1972, Hartman and Lewis had divorced. According to a Jam showbiz profile, quote, Hartman always thought he'd be just another working guy who had little or no interest in showbiz. But he was a little lonely working at his graphic designer desk every day by himself, usually entertaining only himself with flights of voice fantasies. Man, I would have loved to have been in that room just watching Phil Hartman just mucking about with voices.
Yeah.
On his own? Oh, what would it sound like if John Wayne went on a on a drinking night with Jack Kennedy?
It might go a little something like this.
It sounds crazy.
Deciding he had to find an outlet, he started studying at the LA improv company, the Groundlings, in 1975. You know the Groundlings? I know it as quite one of the big improv joints.
Yeah, lots of big names have come out of there.
He said, I more or less started taking workshops for the fun of it. And 10 years later, I was still doing it for the fun of it. Apparently, the first time he got on stage was they used to at least do a part in the show where they'd bring up someone from the audience. And apparently he put his hand up, got up on stage, and others said, we'd never seen anyone come up with that kind of energy. You know, it was really memorable, right away, his first ever performance.
Cool.
And then soon after he was...
He came back and they pick out some guy and he's better than they are.
Yeah.
Who the fuck's this idiot?
It'd be so annoying.
Yeah.
I've worked really hard.
It's like most of the time hecklers contribute nothing to the show, but then every now and then when they're funnier than you, you're like, fuck you. Fuck you.
This is somehow worse.
Yeah.
Mike Thomas, who wrote You Might Remember Me, The Life and Times of Phil Hartman, tells it via an article in The New Yorker that, and it's, I quote this a little bit, but this is from The New Yorker article. Hartman was instantly good, a performer whose utter commitment begat brilliance, an indispensable utility player who could be counted on in all scenarios. Pretty glowing praise for a performer. Yeah. John Lovitz, who you probably know from a bunch of stuff, Simpsons and Saturday Night Live, and I loved his wedding singer role.
Yes.
Is he a DJ or is he the other wedding singer? He's like in competition with Adam Sandler anyway. And there was this one scene when Adam Sandler's starting to lose it a bit, Lovitz picks from behind a curtain and goes, he is losing his mind and I'm reaping all the benefits. And then he sort of disappears back behind the curtain. And that classic Lovitz voice.
Rat Race, another great one from John Lewis.
Anyway. An all-time great. Everyone remembers it. Rat Race. It was an all-star cast.
Oh, my God.
Rowan Atkinson.
John Cleese.
Yeah. I think it was one of those films where the best thing about it was the cast.
He just looked at me like...
Is Whoopi in it?
It feels like one of those ones that everyone's in. Burt Reynolds? Or am I thinking of Cannonball Run?
I reckon I probably saw it when I was 10 years old. Or 11 when it came out.
Is that Ace? Is that Ace? Classic Atkinson.
Oh, classic Atkinson.
We got Rowan Atkinson, John Cleese, Whoopi Goldberg, Cuba Gooding Jr., Seth Green, John Lovitz, Brecken Meyer, Amy Smart.
Yes.
That's quite a lineup.
Big lineup.
Was it a good movie?
It was fine.
I think it was good for an 11-year-old.
Yeah, about that age, loved it.
So was it when did it come out? 90s.
Oh, August 17, 2001. A much more innocent time.
Yeah.
Just.
Ooh, pre-9/11 world. John Lovitz, a groundling at the time, too considered Hartman a big star, someone who could be told to play a shoe salesman and deliver something jaw-dropping.
Wow.
Quote, whatever he was going to imagine or say was nothing you could imagine or think of. He could do any voice, play any character, make his face look different without makeup. He was king of the groundlings.
Whoa, what amazing praise.
I've seen recent interviews with Lovitz and he talks about the first time he met him. He started soon after and he was playing an understudy in a play they were doing where Hartman was the lead. And he said, the first thing he said to him was, I'm understudy for this character. And Phil Hartman goes to him, oh, you'll be great. And Lovitz remembers walking away going, oh my God, I just spoke to Phil Hartman.
Oh, wow.
He's just like, he was, yeah, which is pretty amazing.
That's so nice.
His first on-screen experience was as a contestant on The Dating Game, a blind dating show. He won the episode, being selected at the end of the episode by The Bachelorette. Yeah, we've had similar shows here. Yeah. I can't remember what they're called, but yeah, some
perfect
sort of
match.
Perfect match, yes.
So he was even
Dave's
good.
Done live version.
Yeah,
of this.
Yeah. I did do a few years of live versions of that show, but so he's even good on that show.
Yeah. Well, sort of, but I mean, it was a different time kind of thing, because he later recalled that winning was, quote, "That was the worst part of it. The other two guys were dolts." "What did it?" She asked me, "If I was a street sign, what would I be?" I said, "Slippery when wet." Oh. He goes, "Yes. And as you might have expected, she stood me up." So she did, for a TV date, she didn't go to the date.
I wouldn't.
I know, that's what he said.
Why'd you go on the show, though?
And she picked him after he said that.
Yeah, yeah.
So I guess she, yeah, slim pickings, I guess.
I mean, what a fucking ridiculous question.
Yeah.
I think you'd be stop sign.
It's one of those questions where they're pretty much begging for him to say that.
Exactly.
Or something like that. And then like, ooh.
Yeah, like I would say hump. Yeah. Hump ahead or something.
Hump ahead.
Because I'm going to hump you. Yeah, no, I got it. I got it, Darren.
Yield, because I'm going to be the strong one in this relationship and you back down.
Okay. It's all creepy. Yeah.
There was a sign.
Roundabout.
Slow children ahead.
Where our kids are not going to be that smart.
There was a sign on my street where I grew up, and it was a give way sign, but someone had just written in, and it was there for like 20 years. Give way to my dick. That's what I'd be. Give way to my dick. I didn't know that was a sign. Yeah, well, if you lived on Villania Drive, you'd know.
Give way to my dick. That's the one that you see. Well, I don't know if you still see that much, but I remember seeing a lot younger. Was a lot of people wrote under stop, they'd write hammer time. You see that around?
Classic.
I've never seen
that's
that.
That's a good
How
bit.
How old are you?
How dare you? I was definitely alive for hammer fever.
It's hammer.
But I think it was way out of date even when I was seeing this as graffiti.
Yeah, that's really funny.
So we're into the 70s, and he began to get some voice work in the late 70s. I think his first one was whatever the 1979 version of Scooby-Doo was. I think it was called Scooby-Doo and Scrappy-Doo. He also did voice work for the Smurfs, the Jetsons, and Dennis the Menace.
So, oh, wow.
A few iconic shows. He started scoring some small film roles as well, such as in the Gong Show movie, he played a role called Man at Airport with Gun. And
okay.
In Cheech and Chong's next movie, he played the role actor being filmed in the background.
Okay. Big star.
Yeah. So he was climbing. He met Paul Rubens at the Groundlings, and they started a creative partnership, with Hartman helping Rubens develop his Pee Wee Herman character, which I know by name, but I don't really. I watched a little clip. And he seems like quite an annoying character.
Yeah.
But I think it was a big deal at some point. Have you heard of Pee Wee Herman?
I've heard of Pee Wee Herman, yeah.
Yeah, and there was some controversy where the actor was caught like in an adult cinema or something, and then he had to sort of disappear for a few years and then could come back.
Yeah.
Was it like a children's character or like just...
Yeah, because I think he would appear...
Or family-friendly.
Like a family-friendly character, and then...
Right.
I don't think he was doing anything like illegal or anything. It was just like, oh.
You're watching porn?
Yeah.
Why would you go to a cinema for that?
I guess it must have been pre-internet.
Oh,
or maybe
you'd
like the camaraderie. It always feels like
the
a weird thing to go, wouldn't you?
You know, at a normal cinema, they just have to pick up a lot of popcorn. This cinema's a little different.
That stickiness isn't spilt Pepsi. So Hartman helped develop that character of Pee Wee Herman, which is a wild fact as well. In 1982, Hartman married again to real estate agent Lisa Strain, but this marriage ended less than 3 years later. According to Strain, he would... And I think she either married again or changed her name, because she's also referred to as Lisa Jarvis in different articles. So I think I end up just calling her Lisa. But anyway, at this point, I'm calling her Lisa Strain. She said he would disappear emotionally. Phil's body would be there, but he'd be in his own world. That passivity made you crazy. Passivity? Passiveness is what I'd say. But I like making up fresh words. Quote goes on, oh, this is a separate quote from her. My sense of Phil was that he was really two people, she later told 2020. He was the guy who wanted to draw and write and think and create and come up with ideas. He was the actor and entertainer, and then he was the recluse. Seeing Phil at the Groundlings was Phil being true Phil. You know, as time goes by, you understand that his personas are his protection and they are his personality. But she said that does seem to be repeated in his relationships. Don't feel there's something intrusive me even reading about some of this stuff about his relationships. But apparently, you know, he would be a bit distant at times, mm-hmm. and that would cause issues his marriages. Obviously, it's hard to be in a relationship with someone who's emotionally distant. From the New Yorker, Hartman met Bryn Omdahl at a party in 1985, soon after his second marriage ended. Sober then, Omdahl had terrible trouble with cocaine and alcohol in the past. Thomas, who wrote that biography, writes, when Phil met Bryn, he may well have been at his most vulnerable state in years. His second marriage's ending had shaken him, and his performing career wasn't taking off. Omdahl was strikingly beautiful, Thomas writes, and the affections of a statuesque blonde may have bolstered Hartman's deflated self-image. But their relationship, he says, was bumpy from the get-go. I know that's such weird. Like, I don't know why I even read that out. Like a biographer later going, this may have been why he could have done this. It all feels like kind of almost pointless.
Speculation,
thank you. In 1985, his career was starting to pick up. Quote, Pee-wee's Big Adventure was released, which Hartman co-wrote with Rubin and Michael Varhol. In the film, the directorial debut of Tim Burton, which I found surprising. Tim Burton's first film, apparently, was Pee-wee Herman's Big Adventure.
Oh, right.
Hartman, in that film, also had an on-screen role as reporter.
Okay.
Not in
He wrote the film, co-wrote it, and the only role they could think to give him was reporter. I'm sure he did a great job, though.
Yeah, he'd be a great reporter. I think he played news people a few times.
Yeah.
The film was a hit, which led to Rubens hosting Saturday Night Live in character as Pee-wee, and Hartman was hired to write material for the episode. Creator and executive producer of SNL, Lorne Michaels, enjoyed Hartman's work and said to Rubens' manager, who, according to Thomas, told him, in effect, you ain't seen nothing yet. Love that manager character. Wow, this Hartman guy's great. Yeah, you ain't seen nothing yet. Despite all the complimentary words about Hartman, he was a lot more modest about himself, later saying, as an actor, I felt I couldn't compete. I wasn't as cute as the leading man. I wasn't as brilliant as Robin Williams. The one thing I could do was voices, impersonations, and weird characters, and there was really no call for that, except on Saturday Night Live.
I was going to say, if only there was a show that had that every week.
In 1986, Hartman was hired by SNL as a performer and writer. As well as Hartman, Jan Hooks, Dana Carvey, Victoria Jackson, and Kevin Nealon were added to that same cast, which already included Dennis Miller, Nora Dunn, and John Lovitz. So John Lovitz got to SNL before him, and then they got to work together on air there, which is pretty cool.
That's nice.
I've been just reading about SNL for a while. It sounds like a brutal time. There's so many big stars that I didn't even know did time on there. Like Chris Rock was on it for a while. Ben Stiller did a year on it, and all these people sort of bombed out on it. I read an article that was written a few years ago that ranked every ever cast member.
Jesus.
They ranked the worst ever cast member at 120 something or whatever. Well, it's a real rough article, and they're mean for the first half, which is wild. I'm like, it sounds like the shittest job to get ever, but it's also.
And they're still better than so many other people who want that job.
Yeah, every year like 2,000 people audition and 4 get in or something.
Yeah.
It's probably more, to be honest.
So it just sounds like it's the kind of job that is always stressful. I listened to the Conan O'Brien's podcast with Mike Myers recently. And Mike Myers, who's the big star, huge success on that show, he said every week he thought he was going to get fired. He never enjoyed it. He was always stressed about getting sacked.
Fuck.
It's just there's something about the culture of that show that just sounds like you're just... And they have their thing is they work all the way through the night on Tuesdays and they write the show. All the writers are in overnight. Everyone has to be there and work through the night to write the show.
Why?
I don't know. Everything, it just sounds like this is how it started.
But it's on
decades
Saturday
ago.
Night.
Yeah.
So why couldn't you work Monday to Friday at regular hours?
I think they meant to work full time, but then they do, maybe it's Thursday, but one of the nights they write the show overnight. Anyway, I was just like, oh, this sounds like full toxic, but.
Do you know who was voted number one?
I do know that. Are you asking me because you know? No. It was, I should say Phil Hartman was in the top six.
Wow.
Nice. Find it. I think
Will Ferrell or something.
Will Ferrell's up there, but he was like, I think he was around the top 10. And Tina Fey was right up. I think she was like three or something.
And is it based on just their time on SNL?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, great.
It was in the Rolling Stone as well, Rolling Stone
Holy
magazine
shit.
As well. So it was like it would have been heartbreaking for so many people who would have heard about it.
145. Who's 145? That's awful.
Robert Downey Jr. 145.
Okay, he'll be all right.
Yeah, I think.
I didn't know he was on it.
Yeah, I don't know either. The Muppets were on briefly early, and they were ranked very low, 144. So
hang on, Robert Downey Jr. was the worst,
and then the Muppets second worst.
But he's Robert Downey Jr.
Yeah, I know. I think
they're the Muppets.
I think that's right. So they both bounced back okay. But that's what it says. Robert Downey Jr. is a comic genius. Making him unfunny stands as SNL's most towering achievement in terms of sucking. How do you fuck up a sure thing like Downey? He's funny in anything. I mean, dude was funny in Weird Science anyway.
He is funny.
Gilbert Gottfried was 141. Colin Quinn, like legends. Norm Macdonald, 139. No. Randy Quaid, 138.
Sorry I'm late, Mr. President. It's my favorite line from Independence Day. Delivered by Randy Quaid.
Oh, yeah, right. He's real funny. Again, I think they sort of say that about him. How do I get to the number one? But yeah, so it's pretty amazing. There were so many people you just never heard of even in it.
But then I was going to say.
Will Forte, 52, who's one of the bigger recent ones.
I was going to say 145 has to be a name we've never heard of. And then it was Robert Downey
Jr. Me too, I'm the same.
Lovitz was at 19.
Oh, my God.
Sandler at 17. Kristen Wiig. 14, Bill Hader, 13, Will Ferrell, 12, Dana Carvey, 11, Chevy Chase, 10.
Here we go. We're in the top 10 now. We're loading.
I mean, yeah, it's the kind of thing. It's like, this is just someone's opinion. Gilda Radner at 9. So you get into absolute legends of it. Amy Poehler at 8, Phil Hartman at 7, Bill Murray at 6, Dan Aykroyd at 5, Mike Myers at 4, Tina Fey at 3, Eddie Murphy at 2, and John Belushi at number 1, who we've done a report on.
Wow. Also, two of my idols in the top 10.
Yeah, great.
Amy and Tina. Amazing.
So good. Yeah.
That's crazy.
In my mind, I'm like, the reason they would have done the whole way and made it a bit bitchier was so it would have got that attention, probably, by being like that mean sort of.
And it's still so subjective.
Totally.
Somebody recently ranked all of Paul Kelly's songs.
Wow.
And like I was scrolling through to see what they said was number one. I was like, I'm not reading your opinion on every single song. That's ridiculous. But I was scrolling and some of my favorites were like, I was like, should have been higher, you know, like, so I was like, this is bullshit. This is your opinion and that's fine. But I mean.
And people know, I think they know listicles like that with opinions and especially with a few slightly dodgy opinions, they're going to get shared more. Yeah. People go, can you believe?
Yeah. Look at this idiot said this song was number one.
I've been pretty obsessed with Leonard Cohen lately. Put him up for the vote for this topic as well. He did not get many votes.
Idiots.
Hartman won with over 50% of the vote. He would landslide it in. Dick Van Dyke I also put up. So
that would have been cool.
But yeah, I've been looking at Leonard Cohen, like his albums ranked, and it's the same. Like they're like, he really doesn't have a bad album, but these are not as good. I'm like, that album's flawless.
Yeah.
What are you talking about?
Exactly. It's so weird when they're like, here's this thing ranked.
Yeah. It's like, funny to see, this is what music experts think. What does that mean for me?
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry, I got a little sidetracked there. But yeah, he's super, as I'll talk about now, he's just super well respected as an SNL alum. Mm. But he joined a cast, and I think the show was really kind of struggling that time. They were burning through a lot of these performers that were coming on, sometimes for one season. And there's another weird thing about it is they're sort of fighting each other for on-air time.
Yeah.
And that was something that Phil Hartman said he really didn't enjoy, trying to you're fighting your friends for screen time.
No, I'd hate that. I'm not competitive.
Please write something for me.
Very ambitious.
Yeah.
I'd be like, yeah, let them have it. It's cool. It's all good.
Going straight into that now. He found his 8 seasons at SNL stressful, telling People magazine in a 1995 interview, "The rejection and backstabbing could be painful, but the hardest thing was competing against your friends for airtime." Which sort of sucked a lot. The New Yorker wrote that Hartman, who was older than many of his peers and professional by habit, excelled at both lead and supporting roles. The skills that Hartman had honed in The Groundlings made him a key cast member who made everyone look good and helped to improve the show. And that because of his steadying influence and rock-like presence, and because he helped her to overcome her stage fright, Jan Hooks nicknamed him The Glue. Soon everyone called him that, sometimes chanting it at table reads when he made the writer's pieces sound good. Glue, 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 glue. Isn't that fun? There's another story about how he got the nickname Glue, but like that is definitely his nickname and everyone calls him that. He was listening to the Al Franken episode of the Conan O'Brien podcast recently, and that was before I'd done any of this research, and he mentions on there they were talking about Phil Hartman, how great he was, and they go, The Glue. It's still sort of
wow,
it's a good
that
nickname
has stuck. It's a great I didn't mean that.
Oh, fantastic!
Didn't mean that entirely. I was sort of about to say it, and then I'm like, I need to say this in a gross tone to make sure everyone knows I don't believe in it. Hartman was perhaps most famous for his impersonations on the show, such as Bill Clinton and Frank Sinatra. But you may also know him from some of the original characters he created, such as the anal retentive chef and the unfrozen caveman lawyer. And I don't, because I really only know a few of the really famous SNL sketches, and most of them are from after his time, like the cowbell sketch I've seen a lot and a few others. I've tried to watch some best ofs, and I'm like, oh, this is the best of? For whatever reason, it's not my kind of sketch comedy.
Not either. Sorry.
Yeah, but it's obviously a super successful show that's been going for decades. Yeah. But for whatever reason, I'm like, I expected this to be funnier, but just, you know, comedy is subjective. SNL producer Lorne Michaels once said, "Phil Hartman, I think, is the least appreciated, except here." So he did not get a lot of love in the media and that sort of stuff, but internally a lot of love. Michaels went on to say, "That kind of ability to do 5 or 6 parts in a show where you're playing support or you're doing remarkable character work is different than doing the well-known or more popular characters." You know, the people who are becoming big stars instantly from it.
Yeah.
It was also funny to hear some people who are like, he was really one of the only people who were going like, I can't do any more parts in this week's episode. Everyone else is like, please give me anything. I'll take any scraps.
And he's like, everyone's going, I need
you in my sketch, please.
I don't have time to change.
Yeah. In 1986, Hartman also scored a small role in iconic comedy, The Three Amigos. And it was, I don't know, have you seen that recently?
No.
I had to go back and watch a clip. He was like just a classic smarmy Phil Hartman character.
He's so good at smarmy.
Over the following 10 or so years, he also appeared on the big screen in Fletch Lives, Loaded Weapon, Coneheads, So I Married an Axe Murderer, Sergeant Bilko, and Jingle All the Way.
I was first imagining him as a gross boyfriend.
Oh,
and I was like,
right.
What is that? And then I was like, it's Sergeant Bilko.
Yeah.
So good in Sergeant Bilko.
So as those films went on, his roles were getting bigger as his sort of star was growing. And he was like a relatively big character in Bilko and Jingle All the Way. I think he was played Arnie's neighbor. Again, an unlikable sort of neighbor guy.
He plays an asshole so well.
So well. So he wasn't the lead in any of those films, but he didn't seem to mind too much telling Jam Showbiz, "It's fun coming in as the second or third lead. If the movie or TV show bombs, you aren't to blame. Hey, I'm the bad guy, the jerky guy. I did all I could to make it interesting." The jerky guy character became one of the trademarks of his career. And according to an article in the Star Tribune, Hartman loved playing these Weasley characters. There were many variations, but were often seedy, vain, or otherwise unpleasant. When asked about his influences, he said, "My ultimate favorite was Jackie Gleason's Ralph Cramden from The Honeymooners. But I'm a really big fan of Bill Murray. He's been a great influence on me. When he did that smarmy thing in Ghostbusters, then the same sort of thing in Groundhog Day, I tried to imitate it. I couldn't. I wasn't good enough. but I discovered an element of something else. So in a sick kind of way, I made myself a career by doing a bad imitation of another comic. I think that's pretty common. Like, you hear the Rolling Stones were trying to sound like, you know, like Howling Wolf and American blues musicians. Mm. And they did it. They didn't couldn't sound like that, but they sounded slightly different, and that became a big thing in its own way. Mm. I think that's pretty common in the world. You imitate your heroes, and then it spits out a new, different thing. In 1987, like kind of like how you try to imitate me, it's not the same, Jess, but it is a new great thing.
It's its own in its thing, own right. And a lot of people argue better.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not one of those.
No, but a lot
I'd
of people.
I'd say equally and differently good.
Nah, but and I know that's what you say, but a lot of people are outside of this room say that I'm better. I'm not agreeing with
actually,
them
what
either.
Am I talking about? Yeah, I agree. I think you're definitely funnier than me. I forgot what we were talking about there for a second. In 1987, Hartman married Bryn Omdahl, who I mentioned earlier, and in 1988, they had their first child named Sean. His second wife, Lisa, who we mentioned earlier, recalled, quote, "He calls me and says, 'I just became a father, and so I wrote a card. Dear Phil and Bryn, you know,'" much, this is her recounting. This, I don't think this is how she actually wrote the card. "You know, dot, 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 much love from Aunt Lisa. You know, if you ever need a babysitter, dot, 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 I'm so thrilled for you." Lisa said she, quote, "got a letter back that was hair curling, fury, rage, and a death threat from Bryn. The gist of it was, 'Don't ever fucking get near me or my family or I'll hurt you. I never want to hear from you. Never, ever, ever come near me or us, or you'll be really sorry.'"
Well,
okay.
At this
also, I mean, I'm not going to be asking my ex-wife to babysit, am I?
No.
I'm glad that we have an amicable enough relationship that I can call her and say I've had a kid and she sends a card. That's very nice. But like, that's not my first choice, you know? That feels a little bit weird. But
right.
Each to their own.
Yes. Yeah, but I would still argue that that was a strong reply.
Oh, yes. No, I'm just reacting to one thing. Just that part, the letter back, completely unnecessary.
Yes. At this point, Phil's career was really starting to take off, which some have suggested maybe played into Bryn's jealousy, who was also an aspiring actor.
Right.
She had done modeling and she, you know, she was going for roles but wasn't getting any traction in acting. Though in the 90s, she would score a couple of small on-screen roles in the film North and the sitcom Third Rock from the Sun. But, you know, they were quite minor roles.
Third Rock was a good show.
Great show.
I loved it.
John Lithgow. Can't wait till our spin-off Do Lithgow On comes out.
He's fantastic.
The best. I love him.
He's
he can do
so
it all.
Good. He can do it all. Evil. Not evil.
He's released
kids'
albums.
No.
Yes. He's
what
written
do you mean?
Kids' songs.
Songs?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, that's so cute.
I think, again, I learned this from Conan O'Brien's podcast.
I love...
Well, maybe WTF.
I love how
ones.
Much you learn from that podcast.
I learn a
it's
lot.
It's lovely.
It's a great educational tool.
Tour.
Don't...
Why am I keeping
people...
on plugging this huge podcast?
Yeah, don't
listen to it. Stop. I'll give you all you need to know here.
Stop giving people.
I've said every interesting thing that's ever come up on that podcast.
So there you go.
So I don't even bother needing to listen to it.
He doesn't need your help. We do. He doesn't need your listens.
No, yeah. Go back to the start and listen to us all over again. Some people have. There was
multiple times.
During his time on SNL, Hartman was twice nominated for Emmys for writing for a musical variety show, winning in 1989 as part of the writing team.
Awesome. Being stuck at home these days, you probably don't think too much about your internet privacy on your home network because we've got incognito mode, right?
Right.
Wrong.
No. Oh, my God. Let me try
wrong,
again.
Wrong, Dave, because even in incognito mode, your online activity can still be traced.
What?
Yep. Even if you clear your browsing history, your internet service provider can still see every website you visited, David.
Oh, my God. My blood pressure is... gone through the roof here.
What are you looking up?
I might just be having a heart attack unrelated to this.
Well, that's why, even when we're at home, we never go online without using ExpressVPN.
Oh, that's right. Okay, I'm okay.
Yeah, remember ExpressVPN. Make sure your ISP, Dave, for a little nerd like you, you know it's internet service provider, but I didn't. So luckily it said that here on the script. But ExpressVPN makes sure your ISP or internet service provider can't see what sites you visit. Instead, your internet connection is rerouted through ExpressVPN secure servers.
Mm.
Each ExpressVPN server has an IP address.
Internet protocol.
Oh. Internet protocol freely. Each ExpressVPN has an IP freely address that's shared among thousands of users.
Me too. Jess and I looked at each other like, what is he talking about?
That means everything you do is anonymized and can't be traced back to you.
Oh, I love it.
ExpressVPN also encrypts 100%. That's all of it. 100% of your data with best in-class encryption. So your information is always protected. Use the internet with confidence from your computer, tablet or smartphone. ExpressVPN has you covered on every device. Simply tap that button and you're protected.
Amazing.
It's the fastest and most trusted VPN on the market. It's rated number one by CNET, Wired, The Verge, and countless more.
Let's add Do Go On to that list. So protect your online activity today with the VPN that we trust to secure our privacy. And trust us, it needs securing. Visit our special link at expressvpn.com/dogoon, and you can get an extra 3 months free on a one-year package. That's 25%. Bang.
Holy shit. Good math.
That's ExpressVPN, ExpressVPN.com/dogoon. ExpressVPN.com/dogoon to learn more. Now back to looking at whatever we like on the internet. Yeah.
Cats.
Big cows with a cat on its back.
Oh, no. The cat's wearing a hat.
Saucy hat.
Don't tell anyone if you're listening. This is a secret.
Shut up. It's private.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
In 1990, Hartman began doing voices on The Simpsons, the most famous of these being three versions of his Weasley archetype. The incompetent lawyer Lionel Hutz, Dave, I believe, is your...
We were saying on the Patreon episode, my all-time favorite Simpsons character.
He's amazing.
Also my all-time favorite Simpsons character, and I think maybe, probably, this would be almost one of the most common favorites, washed-up actor Troy McClure.
Yep.
And slick monorail salesman Lyle Lanley.
Oh, that's...
Who was a one-off, but such a great character.
Such a great character.
Or maybe he reappeared some of the time. I can't remember.
No, I can't remember. Yeah,
I can't remember him once, but it's a great episode. And a
written
great
by Conan O'Brien.
Yeah, amazing.
You know who wrote that episode?
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah. And it's seen as by a lot of people as the best, if one of the best, if not the best
in my top five.
Episode.
Can I outrun The Flash? Sure. Can Superman outrun The Flash? Yeah.
I had Meso on Primates, podcast I do about primates and popular culture last month, and it was about The Flash. And I asked him that question. I said, hey, Meso, can Superman outrun The Flash? And he just answered it sincerely. I don't even know if he knew the reference, but I'm sure he did and he was just bored of it. But it was cool to get an answer on that finally, a bit of closure.
Thank God.
The creative team at The Simpsons loved Hartman. Phil made the material funnier than we originally imagined, and I couldn't imagine anyone else doing it, said Al Green, the show's executive producer. The following is a big chunk from a Vulture article about Hartman by Joe Berkowitz, which I really enjoyed. It goes like this. It is an honor to be invited. This was written in 2010, so some of this stuff might be slightly out of date, but it is an honor to be invited as a guest voice on The Simpsons. Only after you've made it in some way within your chosen field will this gesture be extended. Athletes, actors, artists, and architects alike have been written in as guests over the run of the show. Architects?
Can you name it? Yeah, I don't know about that.
That's a good trivia question if you name who that is. That's referencing.
I am Pay. That's a reference to him. I am impressed. Anyway, to go on.
All contributing to its Guinness Book World Record for most guest stars. Only a fraction of these people, however, have been asked back a second time. In that regard, Phil Hartman is in an elite class with Albert Brooks, John Lovitz, Kelsey Grammer, and Joe Montana as frequent guests. I mean, they all played. Yeah. All of them played great. Some of the best guests. Albert Brooks played Hank Scorpio, I think.
Oh, yes. Yeah, so
oh,
good.
My God.
John Lovitz, the film critic.
Yes.
Kelsey Grammer, of course, Sideshow Bob, and Joe Montana as Fat Tony. All iconic characters.
So good.
But, yeah, I don't know if more in the last 10 years, maybe there's been others who've been asked back more than once, but... the article goes on. As a frequent guest, though, Phil Hartman was in a class all of his own. He was featured in 52 episodes over a period of 8 years. There is a certain quality to the voice that was both high voltage and velvety, a sonic cocktail that was everything you needed it to be. The fact that Phil Hartman's voice could sound so unctuous and slimy at times meant that he usually portrayed a villainous rival in family-friendly movies like Small Soldiers, Jingle All the Way, and Greedy. But he could also do heroic too. And in animated form, he was able to explore these types of characters on The Simpsons. There he played Moses on the Mountain, Bart's adopted father Tom. Oh, another great character I forget about.
Oh, yeah.
The Big Brother episode, I think that's what... Is that what that's talking about?
Miss Father, who might you be? The drunken gambler.
So good.
I don't remember that.
And then he ends up having this street fight. And then he gets Homer gets knocked out and falls backwards over a fire hydrant. And he goes, "This is even more painful than it looks."
Yeah, okay. I do remember that.
He also obviously played Charlton Heston's likeness in the musical Stop the Planet of the Apes, I Want to Get Off, featuring the showstopper Dr. Zaius. He even got the chance to bring his Bill Clinton impression over from Saturday Night Live for a Halloween episode appearance. Mostly, though, Phil Hartman's contribution to The Simpsons consisted of two characters, and these were anything but biblical, heroic, or presidential. In his first appearance of The Simpsons, Bart gets hit by a car. Homer hires bargain basement attorney Lionel Hutz to represent him. "Here's my card," Hutz says. "It turns into a sponge if you hold it underwater." What started off as a barely embellished caricature of an ambulance chasing shyster eventually devolved into a down and out drunken hobo who also happened to be an attorney. Hutz was meant to be a one-time role, but the staff loved Hartman and wanted to use him again. Their next chance came just a couple of episodes later in the form of another new character in the Simpsons universe. We are introduced to Troy McClure as he hosts the TV show I Can't Believe They Invented That. Dave Faves. Show within a show would frequently pop up in brief bits featured washed-up actor McClure and quack Dr. Nick Riviera hawking ridiculous products like Spiffy, a cleaning solvent strong enough to clean the grime off Edgar Allan Poe's tombstone. More often than infomercials, though, Troy McClure would be glimpsed starring in random educational videos filmed at various points in his career. Whenever there was an opportunity to include an instructional video of any kind, The Simpsons producers could always plug in Phil Hartman and get a laugh out of his perpetually changing catchphrase, "Hi, I'm Troy McClure." He would always start, "You might remember me from such educational films as Lead Paint, Delicious but Deadly, and Here Comes the Metric System." According to interviews, Troy McClure was Hartman's favorite character of all the characters he ever did, and he used to entertain the crew on the set of his post-SNL show News Radio by doing the Troy McClure voice in between takes. So I saw on an interview him saying that his favorite fans are Troy McClure fans.
Such a good character.
As with Saturday Night Live, Phil Hartman played the background a lot in The Simpsons, but he also had a couple of moments in the spotlight, including one of the widely agreed upon greatest episodes of all time, the Conan O'Brien scripted Marge vs. the Monorail, where he played Lyle Lanley, the colorful singing swindler based on The Music Man. He also apparently played The Music Man on stage in college or earlier in his life. And I'm pretty sure I'm remembering right. Isn't the Music Man, is that the one that's set in Gary, Indiana? Am I
I don't know.
Be confusing with someone else. This is still from the Vulture article. Another starring performance of his came in the Fish Called Selma episode. Which is, did we do it? I think we did, that was the Stop the Planet of the Apes episode. Yep. And we did an episode, Dave and I did an episode of Primates about that episode.
Oh, great. That's the one where he marries Selma?
Yeah. And I think we spent a lot of it just reading the script and laughing.
Yeah.
must have been a tedious one to listen to.
I'm just remembering Selma, baby.
Yeah.
Am I right? Is that the thing? Yeah. Or did I make that up? Okay. Selma, baby.
Which was developed to give Troy McClure more of a backstory, albeit one in which his character has fallen on hard times due to an embarrassing sexual proclivity involving marine life.
That's right.
It was like vaguely based on Richard Gere, you were telling me, in the hamstering or whatever.
Oh, yeah, there was rumors about that.
But it's like this weird rumor about Richard Gere that you're like gerbling, sorry.
Oh.
and this was sort of a spoof of that, but it was fish.
Are you gay? I wish.
By 1994, the cast members Hartman joined SNL with, apart from Kevin Nealon, have moved on to other projects. And the cast now included other heavy hitters such as Mike Myers, Adam Sandler, and Chris Farley.
Oof.
So he shared the screen with some of the, you know, the biggest ones in
he
those 8
multi-generational.
Seasons. Yeah. Hartman told the LA Daily News that he felt like an athlete who's watched all his World Series teammates get traded off in other directions. It was hard to watch them leave because I sort of felt we were all part of the team that saved the show. I think it was really struggling that they brought it back in ratings and everything. Soon after, he left the show also. According to the New Yorker, quote, after his final episode, Thomas writes, the cast and crew gathered around and presented him with a gift, a token of deep appreciation for his outstanding service that made him tear up. It was a small pedestal topped with a bottle of wood glue. Is the glue.
That's nice.
Hartman developed his own variety show, The Phil Show, which I love. And I think NBC was right on board with it, but it fell through in the end. It wasn't picked up. I think NBC said that it was that those variety shows, they just weren't working anymore or something like that.
Right. But they went with his nemesis, Dr. Phil.
I think he has said that he kind of, after he's like, he's kind of a relief because he would have had to have sweat blood every week to make it work.
Yeah.
In 1995, he signed on to co-star in a new NBC sitcom instead called News Radio. Do you remember that? I used to watch it. I remember enjoying it.
It vaguely rings a bell.
Yeah, he was the slick talkback radio host.
Right.
But there was a bunch of other people on the show. So the News Radio focused on the staff of a New York City news radio station with an ensemble cast that also included Dave Foley, Stephen Root, Andy Dick, Joe Rogan, who's now a huge podcaster, Maura Tierney, Vicki Lewis, and Candy Alexander.
Yeah, okay, I do remember the show vaguely.
He, along with Bryn and their two children, Sean and Bergen, moved from New York to Encino, California, which is where he started working on that show. His character was the smug radio announcer named Bill McNeil, another classic smug character.
I wonder what – I mean, he plays that smarmy character so well. It's a bit like, because Adam Scott is another one who plays an asshole super well.
Yeah.
And then you see him in a nice role and you're like, what?
Yeah, you're waiting for the twist.
It's really confusing. Or you see interviews with him and he seems like he's quite dry, but he seems really nice. And it's like, I don't know how to feel. I think Phil Hartman's one of those where I assume he's a prick.
Right.
You know, because that's all I've seen him do.
I'm a great actor, please.
Yeah, exactly. He's probably... Well, I don't know. He might be like a lovely person.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like, I mean, who knows for sure, but it sounds like he wasn't the best of relationships, but it sounds like everyone, his friends are all like, oh, he's just a lovely, really down-to-earth normal guy.
I mean, people wouldn't have been so appreciative of working with him his writing and his talent if he was an asshole.
You're not getting called the glue. Yeah. Like you got to be so, like Chevy Chase was also brilliant on SNL, but he wasn't getting bought gifts, I don't think. He was sort of famously disliked.
Exactly.
He was given glue when they asked him to glue his mouth shut.
Yeah, it's quite different. So, yeah, he must have been lovely, but I just see him as a prick.
And then the other part of that is like, oh, he's worked so hard on the show. You know, you read some, like, everyone's got their theories about things afterwards, and that's getting into the sort of the weird gossipy stuff. But they'd be like, maybe he was too focused on the work and not enough on his home life and stuff. But, you know, like, no one knows apart from the people in a relationship, really.
Of course.
Critics liked the show, NewsRadio. Like, it got all positive reviews, basically. But it struggled to find an audience, and NBC moved its airtime around the grid, which really frustrated Hartman. He did say, like, early on, he was like, he hated. He's like, you're killing its chances by moving around, which I know is a thing. But then later on he said, hey, you know, this isn't brain surgery. It's just a comedy show. You know, it's not no big deal. So according to CBS, it had several brushes with cancellation and was surprisingly renewed for a fifth season in 1998. So, you know, a sitcom that gets five seasons is quite a big success, but it was the kind of thing, kind of like Mike Myers. It seemed like they were always assuming that it would probably get cancelled at the end of this season. It's not quite rating high enough, but then, oh, we'll get another year and we'll get another year. CBS also noted that, quote, Hartman had as many hobbies as careers, an avid surfer, fisherman, and scuba diver. He loved sailing and owned as many as three boats at once. More boats than the Iraqi Navy, he once observed.
Good observation.
He played guitar, often jamming with fellow SNL cast members Dana Carvey, who played guitar and drums, and Lovitz on keyboard, and took up flying a plane when he was in his 40s.
You know that scene in Wayne's World where Garth just shreds on the drums? It's not really shredding on drums, is it? But he just has that massive drum solo?
Yeah.
That was Dana Carvey.
Yeah, right. That was him really playing.
Yeah.
He wails.
I like to play.
Tagline for that movie was, you'll laugh, you'll cry, you'll hurl. That was a trivia question in a online trivia I played last week.
If you're going to spew into this.
I like to play.
Bryn continued to battle with drug addiction, his wife, and during the NewsRadio Christmas party in 1997, Hartman's co-star Andy Dick gave Bryn some cocaine after she asked if he had any. Apparently, I think supposedly she had been on a break and in sort of recovery. Hartman's friend John Lovitz blamed Dick for Bryn relapsing, though Dick told 2020 that she was already in relapse mode, which I didn't even know she had a problem with at all in the first place. But yeah, that's the thing that I think Andy Dick and John Lovitz still, they've had this is a big falling out.
Wow.
About this. According to The New Yorker, Bryn started drinking and using cocaine and they fought. Hartman liked buying cars, boats, and even a plane, and then piloting them away from his family, often with a friend to unwind. This, his quiet passivity, not saying that word right, and his love of smoking pot could be alienating and frustrating. Bryn became increasingly unhappy. He had guns. Bryn had a gun. Sometimes when she wanted to argue with him before bed, he pretended to be asleep. The exact details of what happened on the night of May 27th, this is where we get to the, just as a little buffer in case any, if no one listens to this with their kids, but in case there's a little warning for you, for those out there in La La Land, which is what I call listener land. The A's are silent.
listener land.
The exact details of what happened on the night of May 27, 1998, and into the early hours of the following day remain somewhat of a mystery. But according to the ABC News report, quote, this is all from the news report, Bryn Hartman went out for drinks that night with her friend Christine Zander before driving over to her friend and former lover Ron Douglas's house at around 10:15 p.m. Douglas declined ABC News' request for comment, but according to what he told police, Bryn Hartman had a few beers and complained to him about her husband. He told police she left his house around 12:45 a.m., got into her car and returned home. Sean Hartman would reportedly later tell police that he heard sounds he likened to the slamming of a door.
Oh.
At 3:45, as Ron Douglas would recount to police, he was awoken by someone's pounding at the front door. It was Bryn. She told Ron, "I killed Phil. I don't know why." Douglas told police he didn't believe her at first, but then a gun fell out of Bryn's purse. He took it away from her and put it in the trunk of his car. The two drove in separate cars back to the Hartman home, where Douglas found Phil's body in his bed. Police would later discover he had been shot 3 times. Ron stepped away into the hallway to call 911, and then he discovered Bryn had locked herself in the master bedroom. It was about 6 a.m., and the quiet street of Encino, California, was suddenly swarming with police, news cameras, and a gathering crowd of onlookers. Ron handed the gun to police, but had no idea if there were any other weapons in the house. As 9-year-old Sean and 6-year-old Bergen were being whisked to safety, another shot rang out. When police reached the master bedroom, they were greeted with silence. We go through the door. We find a man lying on the bed. He has a bullet hole through his forehead. There's a woman lying next to him, and she also has a gunshot wound, responding LAPD officer Daniel Carnahan said. Looking at the bodies, it's obvious that they were not alive. Bryn had killed herself after taking Phil's life, which was hours earlier. For me, it is one of the most tragic scenes. Hartman had actually experienced the American dream that most people don't get to experience, Carnahan said. To have that taken away in this fashion seems so contradictory and so out of place and so unfair. Los Angeles County Medical Examiner Craig Harvey later determined that Bryn Hartman had a blood alcohol level of 0.12, as well as cocaine and Zoloft in her system that night. I think Zoloft is it's some sort of prescription medicine, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Greg Omdahl said the murder-suicide was like getting punched in the gut because I knew my sister would never murder anyone. It was such a hard thing to face. A year after the murder-suicide, Greg Omdahl filed a wrongful death lawsuit against Pfizer?
Yeah.
It's like one of those big pharmaceutical companies.
Oh.
So he sued them, the maker of Zoloft, on behalf of the Hartman estate. Omdahl said, I did file a lawsuit against Pfizer, alleging that the use of Zoloft caused my sister to not know what she was doing, and she shot her husband. And when she came out of that, she shot herself. When the lawsuit was filed in 1999, Pfizer gave a statement to Salon Health that, quote, there's no scientific or medical evidence that Zoloft causes violent or suicidal behavior. The suit was settled for $100,000 and there was no admission of any wrongdoing.
Well, combined with cocaine and a lot of alcohol, you can't blame one of those things.
Yes.
You know, it's the cocktail of all of them. And
her personal makeup and all, like so many things, the scenario, and like
it's so tragic awful.
I know, but
I don't think you can sue a pharmaceutical company for
it's
that.
I don't know why I was not prepared into that. I'm like, Phil Hartman, this is going to be a fun episode, and I did, even though I did in the back of my mind I knew it ended tragically, but yeah. I didn't prepare myself for it.
I'd forgotten how,
right?
So yeah, that's awful. And this is so dumb that this is what I thought of, but when she's banging on the friend's door, I was like, who's with the kids?
Right.
That was my thought.
Yeah. Well,
and then it's
true.
Like, I killed Phil, and I'm like, yes, but who's with the kids?
Yeah, yeah. Well, no one at that point.
Shit.
But yeah.
So they're 9 and 8? So 9 and 6 or something, the kids?
Yeah. Awful. Orphaned in a night. It's I had this article had some quotes from there, and I'm just like, too heartbreaking.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Good call there, I think.
Bryn's sister Kathy and her husband, this is kind of a nice thing. Bryn's sister Kathy and her husband raised both Sean and Bergen in the Midwest. So they were able to be raised by their uncle and auntie.
Yeah, by family.
Back in the Midwest, which I believe is like, you know, you'd be getting right away from the wild Hollywood lifestyle and all that sort of stuff.
A little bit of anonymity.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
And Greg Omdahl said that they grew up as loved children. By 2019, Sean was 31. So this is from an article last year, all of this. By 2019, Sean was 31 and pursuing his dreams of being an artist and musician, and Bergen was 27, recently married, and had started a business that's doing really well, according to Greg Omdahl. So
that's,
you know,
good,
they've got things. Obviously, you never get over, but they've got, sounds like
they've moved forward,
things together as much as they can.
Mm.
Greg added, I believe my sister would be very proud of how Sean and Bergen have grown up and the people they've turned into. News Radio, which had only been renewed for a 5th season just prior to that tragic night, did a memorial episode and brought in John Lovitz into the cast due to his closeness to Hartman, and as a way for the show to try and cope with his loss. According to Heavy.com, in August 2014, Hartman was awarded a posthumous star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. His brother John accepted the honor on Phil's behalf. Hartman's former SNL co-stars Lovitz and Kevin Nealon were on hand to speak about their late friend. Hartman's longtime agent, Betty Fanning McCann, was also there to honor him. Phil Hartman was very loved by Hollywood, and we are thrilled that he's being honored with his own star. This man made millions laugh for years and will always be treasured, said Leron Goobler. Great name. Hollywood Chamber of Commerce president and CEO at the time. So I'm ending with some slightly
But
the name Goobler is amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love that very much.
How old?
Leron Goobler.
How old was Phil? Do you know? Even ballpark?
He died in 98, was born in 47. So
Dave?
Is that 50, 51?
51.
Yeah, right. Packed a lot into a life, hey?
Yeah, amazing.
Yeah.
One of those guys is like, oh, you designed iconic bands album covers. So you did that was your whole career? Oh, no, you just squeezed that in early.
Yeah. And kind of a slow burner too, you know? Like
yeah, he
just
didn't.
Always something happening.
Yeah, that's right.
But not like... You know, your leading man. That's the kind of life I would want. I love to be in the chorus.
Yeah.
You know? Someone else be the star, sure. But I'm here still.
Well, that's kind of what you are on this show. Dave and I are the stars.
Okay, I was going to say Dave. I was thinking the same joke, but I was going to say Dave's the star, obviously.
I thought it was funnier if I was like a bit What am I thinking there? What's that word? It's like diluted, but it's not diluted.
Diluted.
You're diluted.
I'm a bit diluted.
I'm so close. Diluted? Yeah. No. Diluted.
Diluted. I thought that would be funnier if I was deludedly thinking of myself.
As the
Whereas
star.
I know that you two, I'm really the chorus and you two are the star. Okay, happy now.
No, because now you're just fishing for us to
no,
say.
I'm not.
No, Matt, you're the star.
Shut up. That's just a true belief.
Shut up. Shut up. You're the star.
I'm sorry,
did you just
silence star. A woman?
No, I was directing that at Dave. But if you also heard it, then great. You two stars. You probably don't hear that a lot.
No one says no to you, do they?
Surrounded by yes men. Me. Yes man.
Great movie.
Well. Probably a stretch, but a real fun movie.
It's a fine movie to chuck on.
It's super underrated. I think it's got so many funny moments because it's got Rhys Darby in it, who's just killer
Very
the whole
good.
Way through.
Jim Carrey's quite good.
Zoe Deschanel's so great.
Bradley Cooper plays
Bradley
like a small role.
Yeah.
Wild. Anyway.
He's a good sort of straight man character in it. There's some great scenes where Carrey's drunk and the fight. People are listening going, you don't like Saturday Night Live, but you're like, yes, man? I bet that's pissing some people off. Well, I can't get a handle on what do you think's good. This quote goes on, sorry. There's so much to say about this man, so deserving of this recognition. I think this is still from... Our man, Leron Goobler.
The Goobler.
There's so much to say about this man. So deserving of this recognition. Funny and respected among his peers. Oh, no, sorry. This was Kevin Nealon. Damn it. He was pure funny. Kevin Nealon also recently been on Conan's podcast. He was pure funny. He was a smart improviser and his nickname was Glue because he held the sketches together. If one of us messed up, he covered for us. He was brilliant. As a final note, here is another excerpt from Joe Berkowitz's Vulture article. I'll finish with this paragraph. After Phil Hartman's untimely death in May of 1998, the producers of The Simpsons wisely decided not to find a replacement for the characters of Troy McClure or Lionel Hutz. This move was both a display of respect to the actor and an admission that he was impossible to replace.
Wow.
Although he was nicknamed the Glue for his work on Saturday Night Live, perhaps Hartman was also the secret weapon that kept The Simpsons together too. In order to maximize Hartman's limited availability, nearly every episode that featured Lionel Hutz also featured Troy McClure and vice versa, thus guaranteeing at least a couple of bankable extra laughs in every other episode. That may not seem like a lot, but it adds up. Phil Hartman was undoubtedly a part of the reason why seasons 2 to 9 of The Simpsons are roundly thought to be the show's best years.
Wow.
It's no coincidence. I think that makes sense to me as well. I mean, there was a lot of factors, but he was a big part of it.
Yeah, definitely. And it is so tragic that he died, but it does also keep those characters in those golden years rather than every other character has now been in a lot of shitty episodes.
Yeah.
But Those two characters never in an unfunny, ungolden episode. Isn't that amazing?
Because I was thinking that originally. I was like, well, if he died, how did, but they didn't keep going with that character.
Yeah, but we've just seen those episodes so much.
Yeah.
That
wow.
And you remember him so well. You're like, oh, he's in so many episodes.
They play through our minds a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
And on this show, they play through our mouths a lot.
My other favorite character is Duffman.
Oh, Duffman's great.
Duffman can't breathe.
Yes.
Oh, no.
I did have a, I've got a list of all of his you may know him from titles. I can read a few if you like.
I love them.
Or yes, maybe please. Can we could use a few of them for the Patreon show.
Oh, yes.
Oh, great. Yes.
That's a great idea.
Can I just ask as well, if you know, is Duffman and Disco Stew the same actor?
Oh, I think they might be. Yeah.
In my head, but they
sound
the same.
And it's one of the key casts,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, it sounds like Hank Azaria.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But anyway, I guess this is means it's now time for everyone's favorite section of the show, the fact, quote, or question section, which has a jingle, Jess, I think, or something a little like.
Fact, quote, or question.
Ding.
Oh, a little late there, Dave, but.
He never forgets the ding.
Can I quickly say, while we're still talking Simpsons, just quickly.
Of course.
The fact check at the end of the episode. Frank Gehry was the first architect to appear on The Simpsons.
Oh, what was his role?
He played himself, I believe.
When he scrunched up the paper. Is that it? Something was like a scrunched up piece of paper?
Yes, the scrunched up piece of paper, yes.
I don't remember that.
He scrunched, for some reason he scrunched up a piece of paper and that was like, oh, that's a great design.
Oh.
Because so his buildings look pretty wild. Like
yeah,
that.
Like he designed the Guggenheim.
The Guggenheim? No, just the annex. That's a George Costanza.
Oh, yeah. In Bilbao, yeah.
All right. Well, the fact quote or quote. Oh, geez. Our Simpsons fact checker who does a column weekly on our Patreon.
Jacob Lane.
Jacob Lane has got his work cut out from this week.
Oh, sorry, Jacob.
Sorry, Jacob.
Feel free to pick a few, I guess.
Yeah, you really need, you feel free to have a week off if you like.
Yeah, it's, sorry about that.
It feels like a thing that must now have become a burden to him.
Yeah, you can stop any time.
We love it, but there is no pressure.
Of course.
I was thinking today, because I've just seen the first one, we are banking up a few of these fact quote or questions. I was thinking, because just looking, the next few are facts. So how about we do four this week? You'd be up for that?
Four facts?
Four facts. The next four fact quote or questions
but
are all
that
facts.
That depends. Are you... Like you have
you're
to
gonna
stay-
decide if they're fun or
not. No, okay, yeah, sure. I was gonna say you've got to stay on track and just like
yes. Oh yeah, I'll stay on track, but we've still got to give them their time.
Of course, of course.
They've been waiting patiently. So in this section you go to patreon.com/dogoonpod. On there, every month it seems like there's new rewards. We've now got three bonus episodes on a certain tier. On the fact quote or question tier, which is the Sydney Scheinberg Deluxe Memorial Edition level tier, you get to give us a fact quote or question. You also would have voted on this week's topic. There was only, you know, it was, I said it was a landslide, but it was still only like 15, 20 votes that separate. Yeah. And that's a landslide. Usually in this one, because there's not that many voters, every vote is worth quite a bit. But, yeah, you get to give yourself a title in this as well. Oh, something I was also should mention is you get into our Facebook group, which is for patrons only, and that's a lot of fun. There's a lot of discussion. Every day there's posts, listeners and patrons post and chat to each other. Some of those patrons have started a weekly Zoom catch-up, which I've dropped in on in the last couple of weeks. Which always feels like, you know, it feels like I'm the teacher coming in and ruining the fun or something.
Yeah.
Hey, guys, how's it going? And they're like, oh, hey, Matt.
Yeah. Hi, Mr. Stewart. No, we weren't smoking bongs. All right.
But it's cool.
Bye,
like,
kids.
It's fun. I'm jumping in on this thing and it's like, oh, there's someone from Canada, someone from London, someone from Perth, someone from New Zealand. There's just people from all around the globe.
Amazing.
So that's that's not an official reward, but that is just a cool bonus thing that's happening and just an example of why it's a cool community in there. Just real cool, fun place. And yeah, I'm seeing people in there saying, oh, this is my happy place. Anyhow, it's a cool group, and yeah, there's so many rewards, too many to mention. Yeah. Just told me to keep on track. I have done that. So here's a few facts from our fact, quote, or questioners this week. Firstly, coming from the junior comptroller of consuming media, it's Paul Jacob.
Paul Jacob.
I love comptroller. Where's that from? That's just, they use that in The Simpsons. It's not an Australian term, is it? This is an American thing. I don't know what it means.
Yeah, Superintendent Chalmers is always scared of the comptroller.
He must be, must be next step up above the Superintendent.
It's probably like the ombudsman, which I never know what they do. Anyway, what's the fact?
His fact is, I love Do Go On. That is all.
That is a succinct fact, and I'm going to say a fun one.
That's fun. Oh,
Paul Jacob, officially fun.
Congrats.
Great fact.
Congratulations.
And thank you so much for all your great work as junior comptroller of consuming media. You're doing God's work, and we really do appreciate it. I'd also love to thank the general manager of Not Able to Have Nice Things. It's Maximilian Duke. Your name is real, goddammit. Congratulations, you.
I was trying to say congratulate your parents for us, and all I could say was congrats. Congrats. Anyway.
That is all. Congrats. Maximilian writes, I use a spoon to apply various spreads, soft cheeses, jams, etc., to breads. You might think this is weird. Why not use a knife or a spreader like a civilized person? What's a spreader? Well, the convex side of a spoon possesses the perfect ergonomics for putting peanut butter on bread without having to lift it off a plate or risk dropping a cracker because you hold it awkwardly to get all the pimento cheese off a knife. It is especially great for putting cream cheese on a hot bagel. Love a schmear. Sandy Cohen taught us that.
I love a fun
perfect
schmear.
Way to schmear a bagel without burning your hand. Trust me. Give it a try. Is this the fact? Anyway, that's just a fact about me. Tell me something interesting about you. Oh, and in case anyone, brackets Matt, is wondering what the convex side of the spoon is, I reckon I know what the... Come on, mate. I'm play dumb, but I actually am probably the smartest person in this room right now. Anyway, I'm guessing this is for listeners in case anyone doesn't get it at home. It's the bottom of the spoon.
I thought it was
when
the
you're
handle.
Eating soup.
I think this rug is smarter than you.
Basically, it's the spoon's undercarriage. Oh, he's explained his explanation. The bottom side when you're eating soup wasn't enough. let me put it in a real terms you might understand. It's the spoon's undercarriage, which would also be a good band name. The spoon's undercarriage.
I think undercarriage in general would be a good band name. Just undercarriage.
Spoon is a good band already.
Okay.
Maybe a good cover band of Spoon cover band
Spork.
Is Spoon Undercarriage. Carriage. I don't know. I went to my parents' place yesterday and we ate with splades.
Oh.
Which is a fun blast from the past.
Mm.
The superior spork in my mind because it also has a nice knife edge. Anyway, he finishes by saying, thanks for the laughs. Thank you for the facts, Maximilian Duke, that fact about spoon as spreaders. Any thoughts on that, Dave?
Keep smearing I agree with the maybe the schmear.
I use it to put avocado on toast.
Yeah, avocado.
You scoop it from the bowl because I've obviously smashed the avocado.
Mm.
And then you can get a scoop of it and then go flink and flick it on and then spread it out with the whatever the fuck he said, the other side of the spoon, the undercarriage.
Convex, mate.
The undercarriage.
The undercarriage, please.
The boudoir.
Whatever the fuck.
I'm sorry if I sound a bit diluted here, but...
I just say the spoon's bum.
I reckon because I'm all about lessening washing up, so I'll use a spoon. If I've already used the spoon, I'll keep that spoon out for spreading for sure.
Great.
Because you can scoop out some spreadables easier with a spoon too. Anyway, thanks for that fact, Maximilian Duke. Is that fun?
Well, it was a fact about him, and it was a fun fact.
Great. Next up, Chief Bison Wrangler, Northeast Division.
Oh.
This is from Luke Durham. Love that title. I think I've said this on the record. Bison, one of my favorite animals.
Bison.
Did a year 7 project for geography about the North American bison. Big fan.
Was it a poster?
It was a poster.
Love a poster.
I love a thick animal.
Yeah.
That's why I love wombats. On average, this is his fact, on average, sloths travel 41 yards per day, meaning they would be excellent pets for self-isolation. That's a great fun fact. But I mean,
so what, they can't go far?
They can't. They're so freaky. I don't know if I want to be
weird.
Have one in my house, apart from, you know, cruelty or whatever to the animals. But they just, they also move in a creepy way. Imagine waking up and seeing a really slow moving shadow next to your bed like that. Actually, that'd be great.
Your problem is that
really,
it's not
a real heart starter.
Not thick enough.
Not thick enough. They're the opposite. They're spindly.
They are.
I'm enough spindly in one house, okay?
What do they eat?
Sloths.
Yeah.
Have to be. If it's another animal, it'd have to be a slow one.
I don't think they eat other animals.
Oh, well then most plants are pretty slow.
Yeah, that's true.
Thank you for that fact, Luke. Fun or not?
Fun.
Oh my God, we're on a hot streak. The patrons are on today.
Let's see. Let's round it out, number four.
Finally, with fact four from the Director of Craft Services for Do Go On, Matthew Bohr. Your work will not go unthanked.
Yeah, we love craft services.
It's Bohr, B-O-E-R, Bohr?
B-O-E-R.
He's a real booer. Some people are thinkers, some people are booers. He's given us a fact for the original Terminator. Oh, Dave, this would be up your alley. You're a big fan, aren't you?
You guys haven't seen Terminator yet? Have you seen
it? I haven't, no.
Sorry.
Do yourselves
Sorry.
A favor.
All right,
when
we'll
you
watch
Back to the Future trilogy, I'll think about it.
All right, I've watched number one. I've watched one. You watch one.
Okay.
I'll watch two.
Two.
Watch
I think in
two.
Both of them, two is the classic.
True.
Although I do love, I love Back to the Future one. I think it goes in order for me, 2, 1, 3.
That'd be the same with Terminator.
Wow, there you go.
But not Die Hard.
Mm.
Yeah, Die Hard is one's the best.
Yep.
Yeah, because it's got the best bad guy of all
Too
time.
Too old for this shit.
That's so different. That's Lethal Weapon.
I'm just saying.
Phil Hartman was in the spoof of Loaded Weapon. So this is from Matthew Bohr. He offers us this fact. For the original Terminator, a lot of actors were being looked at for the role before Arnold Schwarzenegger became the iconic Terminator. Among one of the suggested people to play the role was O.J. Simpson.
Whoa.
But James Cameron didn't believe he could play a convincing killer.
Oh, wow.
That is pretty great if true. O.J. never did any screen testing, though Arnold was under the assumption for years O.J. was close to being the lead, even saying that James Cameron had done a painting with O.J.'s face on a Terminator poster, then painting over it with Arnold's face. He painted his own movie posters? That's the fact. You buried the lead there.
He's the one in Titanic.
Right.
The drawing of Rose. That is James Cameron.
Ah.
His drawing.
No kidding.
He's a good artist, yeah.
That's right. Dave, that's a fun fact.
Thank you.
So he wrote himself into a scene to draw naked Kate Winslet.
Basically.
Wow. It's a different time, hey?
Different time. They're all the fact quote or questions for this week. A fantastic array of facts.
Can I just say, number four, fun fact.
Oh.
We did it.
4 out of 4.
And a bonus in there that yeah. James Cameron paints his own posters.
5 out of 4.
Wow, that ain't bad.
So good. All right, that brings us to thanking our other Patreon supporters. You can get involved in this if you're on the certain level there. I think it's the $5 level. And
DB Cooper level, I think I looked
DB Cooper level. And this week, I'd love to kick it off. Are we going to... I'll give them a couple of their own titles.
Yes, please. That'd be awesome.
And I'm starting with who's been waiting patiently since October 2018 from Melbourne, Victoria. It's Miss Alexandra Joy. What a name. A name that is, I'd say, pretty happy. That is a happy name, Miss Joy.
Hmm.
And you might know Miss Joy from
you
such
might remember
films
me.
As The Boat Jacking of Supership 79, Calling All Quakers, The Itchy and Scratchy Movie, The Contrabulous Fabtraption of Professor Horatio Huffnagel, Cry Humor, and David versus Super Goliath. That's
Whoa.
Fun.
Whoa. Have you got one that long for all of them?
Well, I've just got a list. I can read as many
That's
as you want.
Sick.
Alexandra Joy, thank you for bringing the joy.
Thank you, Miss Alexandra Joy. Thank you so much for waiting patiently. Thank you so much for your ongoing support. It means a lot. You keep this show running. Legend. And from our own hometown. Love that.
Mm.
Thank you, Miss Joy. I'd also love to thank from Calabasas in the United States of America, in CA, which is California, right?
California. California.
I'd love to thank Larry first.
Yes. But who's second? I hate myself.
Oh,
Larry.
You might know Larry first for such films as Dial M for Murderousness, The Electric Gigolo, The Erotic Adventures of Hercules, Give My Remains to Broadway, Gladys the Groovy Mule, The Good Time Slim, Uncle Doobie, and The Great Frisco Freakout, and Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore. No, Alice Doesn't Live Anymore. Fuck this.
That's amazing.
So much.
Thanks, Larry.
Thanks so much, Larry. First, a couple of fantastic names to kick off. I doubt you'll be able to top it, but I'd love to see you have an attempt.
Can I have a crack?
Please.
I would love to thank from Nottingham in Great Britain. I would love to thank M.R. Smith.
Oh, M.R. Smith.
Not Emma, M.R.
Oh, M.R. Smith. You might know him from such films as Make Out King of Montana, Meet Joe Blow, The Muppets Go Medieval, P is for Psycho, Preacher with a Shovel, The President's Neck is Missing, or Radioactive Man 1, 2, and 3, including Bring On the Sequel and Oh God, Not Again, and of course, The Revenge of Abe Lincoln. That's funny that that became an even more ridiculous film in real life, the Abraham Lincoln vampire killer.
Yeah.
Sounds like a Troy McClure. Oh, that's great. Thank you so much, M.R. Smith.
Thank you so much. And I would also love to thank from Holyhead in Wales, Kieran Desmond.
On your Kieran.
Kieran Desmond.
On your Kieran.
Fantastic, Kieran. It is so good to make your acquaintance. And the others, of course, would know him from The 7-Year-Old Bitch. Sorry.
Like The 7-Year Itch. Oh, 7-Year-Old Bitch.
It's good stuff.
You can imagine James Cameron painting the poster.
Oh, my goodness. Sorry, I've lost my place. That was so good. Sorry, wrong closet, which is one of the ones that he said on Letterman Room. Suddenly, Last Supper, they came to burgle. And today we kill, tomorrow we die. Oh, I'm going to give you a couple more. The verdict was mail fraud and the wackiest covered wagon in the West. Fantastic
films. Amazing.
Kieran,
congratulations on an amazing filmography.
Such fine work.
Well, can we thank one Kieran and then thank another?
Oh.
From Leicester in Great Britain, I would now like to thank Kieran Foster.
Kieran Foster, is this the last
Foster.
One?
Two
more. Okay, great. Well, I've still got heaps, actually. Well, you might know Kieran from such educational films and self-help videos as 60 Minutes of Car Crash Victims, Adjusting Your Selfostat, Alice's Adventure Through the Window with the Windshield Glass, Birds, Our Fine Feathered Colleagues, The Decapitation of Larry Leadfoot, Designated Drivers, The Life-Saving Nerds, Dig Your Own Grave and Save, Earwigs, Ooh, Firecrackers, The Silent Killer.
Earwigs, Ooh, I could hear in his voice that it would have been amazing.
Fuzzy Bunny's Guide to You Know What.
She's faking it.
And... Get confident, stupid.
That. Oh, Kieran, fantastic stuff. You have a fantastic filmography. And finally, I would like to thank from Herne Hill in Western Australia, Curtis Dylan Brennick.
You might know Curtis from such educational films as The Half-Assed Approach to Foundation Repair, Locker Room Towel Fights, The Blinding of Larry Driscoll, Man versus Nature, The Road to Victory, Meat and You, Partners in Freedom. Meat spelt M-E-A-T. That one's a real... Mummy, What's Wrong with That Man's Face? Mothballing Your Battleship. Phony Tornado Alerts. Alerts Reduce Readiness. Shoplifters, Beware. Smoke Yourself Thin. And Someone's in the Kitchen with DNA. And of course, Whoa, Don't Touch Me There.
Thanks, Curtis.
Thank you, Curtis.
There's so many good ones. One of my favorites is the greatest story ever hula'd.
I skipped that one because I didn't know how to pronounce it. It's about hula hooping. Is that it? Great.
The greatest story ever
hula'd. The greatest story ever
hula'd. What are you talking about?
That's so good.
I fully did not get that. The greatest story ever hula'd. Spelled H-U-L-A-E-D. I'm like, what does that
what
mean?
Is that? I'm going to go and watch a Best of Lionel Hutz on YouTube now.
Oh, Lionel.
That's
what a character.
So good.
I wasn't wearing a tie at all. Thank you to all of those great supporters.
Thank you.
We love your work. And like we say, you keep the bloody show running. But maybe even more so, the Triptych Club, a very exclusive club for people who have been supporting us, like those good people we just read out, but for 3 years straight, which, to be honest, some of them are getting close to because it's taken us so long to read out their names.
Yeah.
But let me just, while I check if anyone's been inducted into the Triptych exclusive club mm-hmm. today, Dave, do you want to explain what it is? And Jess, what are they eating and drinking?
So, yes, people that have been supporting the show at the shout-out level for 3 consecutive years, so 36 months without dropping off. My goodness, we tip our hats to thee and also induct you into this exclusive club. And usually for the people that are already in and the new inductees, Jess organizes a fantastic menu. Sometimes it's food, sometimes it's drinks, sometimes it's both.
Mm. And this week we are honoring our star of the show, Dave Warnicki, with his favorite drink, a pina colada.
Oh, thank you so much.
Yeah.
If you like pina coladas.
I do.
That and song is fucked.
It is not.
It's not good. The opening line is, I was tired of my lady. We'd been together too long.
I was tired of my lady.
Like a worn out recording of your favorite song.
It's brutal, but as it turns out, she was sick of him as well.
Yeah. And then they got together again.
Yeah.
Very confusing. Anyway, so we're having pina coladas and then to complement that, deep fried pineapple.
Ooh, fritters.
Pineapple fritters.
Yum, yum.
And also,
delicious.
What a tropical holiday.
Quesadillas. They don't go at all, but that's just what we have on the menu.
Oh, well, I mean, these are all being added to the menu as well, right?
Oh, yeah. It's an extensive menu.
Who's playing in the corner?
We actually have our Rupert Holmes playing his pina colada song on loop.
Oh.
But you don't get sick of it.
Oh, great.
Somehow.
Like your favorite song?
Oh, you like pina colada. Everyone's like, yes, play it again, Rupert.
It's funny because I was born sick of it.
If you're not into yoga.
It's a magical place.
If you have half a brain, very patronizing.
If you like making love at midnight.
Who likes making love at midnight? I've got to get put to work tomorrow.
He's kind of setting a low standard in some points there. If you've got half a brain.
Yeah. And you're not into yoga. All right. Well, fuck.
Parody song.
That's a weird stipulation, but sure.
What about parody song? If you like making love on midnight. Bit of fun.
Man, I'm confident Weird Al's beating you to that one.
Is that true?
Surely.
Probably not midnight. I don't know.
It'd be so good if the whole song is built around that one. If you're like making love on midnight.
Well, that's a specific one, but.
Yeah.
All right. So there are 4 inductees into the Triptych Club this week who are enjoying those things. Dave, when he figures out coding, is also going to put all these names up on the website on a special page.
That's right.
In sparkly gold font.
Mm-hmm.
Or if anyone wants to, any coders out there who want to get in touch with Dave. You know, do it.
I mean, if they're really good, they'll hack the website and do it themselves.
Yeah.
That'd be good.
That's a challenge to you, coders.
You challenging people to hack our website?
No, please don't do that.
I mean, what are they going to find?
Well, they won't find, but they'll just put up stuff there like a picture of the butt. Oh,
yeah,
we did that already, didn't
we? Or something like Dave flipping them off, for example.
We hacked our own website. if you click on your mum's butt tab, you'll see a photo of Dave. Still funny after all these years. We are eventually going to get around to redoing the website. Anyway, 4 inductees into the club tonight. Come in behind the velvet rope. Make yourselves at home. From London, we have John Failner.
Welcome, Felner, John.
From Royal Oak in MIUS. Mizzou?
Michigan.
Michigan.
I don't know. Is that right?
Michigan.
It's John Cole Wilkinson. I feel like this is MI is one we go for all the time.
You got to be confident, man. It's Michigan.
Well done.
Well done. From Leicestershire in Great Britain, it's Sam Henson. And from West Sussex, also in Great Britain, it is Sarah Groom.
Welcome.
Welcome one, welcome all. Make yourselves at home. Enjoy the cocktail. Enjoy the cocktail song about cocktails.
We've got a dance floor. We've also got a lounge area. And the music is like a good amount for dancing, but it's not too overpowering. Yeah. You can still have a chat. It's the perfect level.
I love that.
So
yeah, we
welcome
really,
in. Thank you so much.
We curated it nicely.
But that's great. I love welcoming people into the Triptych Club. I love the Patreon section of the show. Generally, one of my favorite sections of the show.
It's a beautiful time. And a reminder as well that we do have that web series. We've got our second episode coming out on Friday.
That's right. Or if you're listening to this in the future, we might have all 9 episodes out.
Yeah.
You can binge it.
Oh, my God. How lucky are you?
Just
the
go
dream.
To, there'll be a link in the show notes, or you can just go to youtube.com/stupidoldchannel.
Mm.
We've also got our own YouTube channel, which is /dogonpod, where we put all these episodes up, and a bunch of those episodes are in video format.
Yeah. I know.
Wow.
It's pretty exciting.
In all 3Ds. Well, 2Ds.
2Ds in those cases. You can find us on all socials at DoGoOnPod, and our email address is DoGoOnPod@gmail.com. But I think that's all that we have to say.
Yeah, I think merch is back up and about. We have to shut it down because of COVID-related mailing restrictions, but that should be up soon.
Yeah.
Sorry, I thought it was up.
Not yet, but I can do it again soon.
But it's coming up soon. And I've got ideas for some new merch shirts.
Great.
Which I want to tell you about.
Okay.
I reckon we should start adding a few extra shirts in there. What do you think?
Okay.
I'll talk about this off air.
Sounds good.
Dave, any final requests?
Yeah, I would love a cheese board.
Okay.
Okay. What's your favorite cheese? Oh, I know you like a blue cheese.
A blue, I like a soft blue.
Yep. I love a camembert.
Well, I like
a, that's a lie. I like a brie.
I like a cheddar. I'm the basic bitch of cheese.
I mean brie.
Oh, brie might be. You're there with me.
Brie's pretty basic bitch.
I love a cheddar. Maybe a smoky cheddar.
Mm. I love a bit of quince paste, and I certainly don't mind a dip.
Oh, yeah. Hummus. Love I love some hummus. Olives. Kalamata, if you please.
Oh, me too.
Nah, too. Don't like them. You guys can go nuts. Anyway, that's
nuts would be yes, great please.
Too. Almonds,
cashews, Brazil nuts, walnuts.
It's fun coming down here to record south of the Yarra so I can have these fancy discussions about cheese boards.
There has never been so many loud cars go past my house ever until we're recording.
I reckon. Do you reckon some of them cut through?
I don't know, but if they did and if you heard them, sorry about that, but it is very unlike this street.
Yeah, this is a little dead-end street.
Yeah, like
in
me.
In a dead-end town.
I tried to wrap it up and then we just went on another tangent.
Anyway, that's the end for this week. Thanks so much, everyone, for joining us. We'll be back next week with another episode. But yeah, keep the in between, before next week's episode, there'll be a new webisode.
Mm.
So check that out on the Stupid Old Channel, please. Like and subscribe and share with your friends. It'd be great to get it out there amongst the world.
Please.
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 Please. Like us. Please.
Please.
Anyway, Dave.
All right. Thank you and goodbye.
Later.
Bye. Bye.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbroadcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates.
I mean, if you want. It's up to you.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.